going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
But right now, we want to talk a little bit about Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels jumped on with John Gruden. He does Gruden Goes Long. And he had some interesting comments. You know, there's been some talk. When we had John Keim on the show, he had talked to Andy Reid, and Andy Reid said year two is going to be a challenge. I don't think he was taking a shot at Jaden Daniels. It was just a general thought that year two is a challenge for all quarterbacks that have to make adjustments because the league makes adjustments. Here's what Jaden Daniels says that I think is encouraging about his routine.
Isn't getting on a routine one of the key ingredients to being successful?
Oh, that's the biggest thing. Like consistency, you know, consistency is the biggest thing in this league. And having a consistent routine, obviously you got to redefine it each and every year as you get older. But finding your routine as fast as possible, I mean, that's probably going to set you up for the most success in the long run.
I mean, there's no doubt one of the things that we heard about Jaden Daniels, which separates him from a lot of people, is his work ethic.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Puts in the work, puts in the time.
It's great to have the athleticism and the gifts he has, being able to throw the football like he does, having, you know, the speed he has, the elusiveness. But the guy's showing up at the park ridiculously early.
He puts the work in, no doubt. Puts the reps in.
He's a gym rat. You love to see it. That's what the great
and
ones have.
And he's naturally gifted. So you put in the hard work with the natural gifts he's got. Yeah, I'm just... A lot of people don't have that.
You know, that's, you know, the headset got a lot of attention using virtual reality, but it shows that he wants to do the extra.
Yeah, I've used my son bought a VR headset, and the only thing I've done with it is play mini golf on it. It hasn't improved my putting stroke. It hasn't improved me one bit, but it's clearly helped Jaden Daniels in
Take
his...
me through the mini golf. Do you hold a putter or do you just kind of...
No, you don't hold so it's, putter. It's, no. No, you
is put... it like the Wii Connect? It's just next level?
Where yeah, you just... yeah. It's just you strap on the VR headset and you just see a mini golf course out in front of you where while you're standing in your basement.
So you see a windmill.
And as long as you stand in like the circle... You have the putting stroke and you look down and there's a putter in your hands, even though it's a virtual putter. And then you do your herky jerky putting stroke that I have and you miss a bunch of times and you get like 3 over par on most of the holes. That's been my experience with VR. Way different than Jaden Daniels.
But point is, he does the extra.
I'm guessing he's not doing mini golf in his VR. He's like going through drills to actually make him a better quarterback. Which is commendable.
Yeah, he also talked about like getting to the next level. All right, he had a fantastic season, but he's not just settling. Mm-hmm. Here's what Coach Quinn told him about taking the next step.
Speaking of Dan Quinn, he's a fiery, upbeat, positive guy. D-line coach, Can you give the fans out there just a quick summary how Jaden Daniels sees his head coach?
Man, I love him. Players coach, he take care of us. He wants the best for us, and he's always looking for ways to tell me how to improve. Like this offseason, I had a conversation with him, and he's like, man, I got something for you that I want to see you take this next step, and I think it's going to be better for you and the whole team too. So, you know, it's that coach where it's like, man, he feels like he has to learn too. He's going to challenge me. I'm going to challenge him.
Yeah, players just rave about Dan Quinn. I remember when he was interviewing and we were kind of goofing on the fact that he left Commander's Park and was standing in like a security line to get back on a flight to wherever he came from.
He's just a normal guy.
Just a good dude.
Yep.
Players gravitate towards him. He's clearly a leader of men and seems to be a good choice.
They all love him.
They do love him. They love what Dan Quinn is selling.
Well, yeah, when he was about to get on that flight, it didn't look like he was the first choice because your boy, Ben Johnson.
Yep, that was my guy.
That was the apple of your eye.
He was. Now, when...
But he then said he didn't want to coach.
When I met Dan Quinn, very briefly, I didn't bring up the fact that I loved me some Ben Johnson
right.
when we were hanging out at that restaurant in Ashburn.
Yes.
I literally talked to him for 5 seconds. And then he went into the room and schmoozed and did his thing.
I probably talked to him for about, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Remember before he walked into the lounge?
Yep.
Just hanging out in the bar?
Mm-hmm. Jason's just a better schmoozer.
Well, I wanted to get to
him. Why did you only have 5 seconds and Jason got 5 minutes?
Because he was afraid to talk to him. He was afraid to go up to him.
So give me your 5 seconds.
I wasn't afraid.
Did you say, hi, I'm John, or hi, I'm Cakes?
I didn't introduce myself as Cakes. I just... introduced myself, and then he shook my hand.
How did you introduce yourself?
I don't know. I probably said, hey, I'm John Alvo from the Sports Junkies.
Okay.
Something goofy like that. Shook hands, gave a head nod, and then he continued to talk with Jason and then went into the big media scrum hangout. That was my encounter with
Dan
Quinn.
But I didn't talk a lot of football with him or Peters.
Right.
You probably talked Salisbury with him.
Well, I told we talked a little Salisbury, mm-hmm. but I also talked to Peters about, you know, what area he's living in. Does he like, does his wife like it? Where his kids were going to school? Just like life stuff.
Non-football.
He didn't want to talk football.
He probably appreciated that.
Yeah. It's the last thing I asked him.
Now, EB early in the season was a little hesitant to give Cliff Kingsbury any credit mm-hmm. for the offense. Had him on double secret probation. Then the offense started going on a tear. Here's what Jaden Daniels says about the offense that Cliff installed.
200 yards rushing, 300 yards pass. I've never seen that much total offense from a quarterback. And then when you teamed up with Cliff Kingsbury, your offensive coordinator, I had no idea what kind of offense you guys were going to run. How do you summarize this Commander offense that you're running?
I think it's unique. I think for us, we got pro style concepts. You know, we don't huddle half the time. Our majority of the time, I would say not even half the time. Sometimes we might huddle. It's like a little muddle huddle where it's like, you know, I'm speaking to everybody, might give a little hand signal here and there, but it's unique and it fits us. You know, we want to be up fast, up tempo, because we don't really want to give the defense a chance to get set. And, you know, in this league, first, second down, but third down, man, they call all the exotic blitzes. You know, you got to go up there. You got to figure out where they're blitzing from. So, you know, we try to eliminate as much as possible. And if we do got to get in that situation, you know, we always prepare for that too.
Seems like it's been a perfect marriage with Cliff and Jaden. What are your odds that Cliff gets plucked next year to be a head coach again?
Depends on how the offense looks. Yeah. If the offense is humming again and they're a top
He'll be one of the top five candidates again. Yeah.
Don't you expect it to... home again? Is there any reason to believe that it won't?
I don't expect them to take a step backwards.
Shouldn't it be, in theory, better with Debo and Tunsil?
It should be
better.
Yep.
But they're facing a tougher schedule.
Sports isn't that predictable.
Right. It's not always
straight
up.
Could have injuries.
Yeah, I think.
But if it does continue to score points and rack up yardage like they were last year, he'll be one of the top two or three candidates.
Yeah.
Defenses will change their game plan against Jaden Daniels based on 1 year of film. Here's mm-hmm. how Jaden said he's going to have to improve.
Now, I know every team in the league has made you the number one offseason project. You know these coaches are sitting in there day in, day out, studying you. How does that motivate you, and what does that make you feel like?
I just think as a competitor, you're always trying to find little ways to get better. And for me, it's like last year was last year. That's great. But it's a whole new year now, and I still got to go out there. I got to prove myself to my teammates, organization, each and every day that I'm getting better. And then when it's time to prepare and when those games come, I got to know that, hey, how can I eliminate some tendencies? You know, stuff like that, because that's the big thing. You know, coaches are always trying to find tendencies of what this player is going to do so they can anticipate it and hopefully get you in that situation.
You're like a coach's dream, man. You know that?
Gruden makes it. Gruden is always
Has he become
funny.
A caricature of himself
kind
at this point?
Of. Now, you know what else he's become? He's become a merchandise slut is what he has become. He's taken what the Junks have done and just taken it. It's like on steroids. Like everybody just sends him free swag now. Like LSU baseball sent him the biggest like duffel bag I've ever seen with, you know, like jerseys and hats. And Jaden sent him a pair of like the shoes that he trains in. And he was raving about them, like some sort of Nike, like training shoes shoes.
In that particular video, was he wearing the LSU stuff?
Wearing the LSU hat. I
just because Jaden
baseball
was
hat.
Yeah, Jaden. I think Jaden is promoting or the sneaker. It's like some sort of training recovery shoe, and Gruden had him on. Gotcha. It looked kind of funky.
He's like, I don't think I'll take him off.
Jaden Daniels was on with John Gruden. He's done a really good job. We were just talking about this in the break. John Gruden with some of his content now that he's kind of back in the mainstream and people are. Kind of, he's talking with quarterbacks, doing all these different things. Mm-hmm. I think he's done a really, really good job. You know, he was someone that I really loved watching his content back in the day. The quarterback school he'd have with, you know, Andrew Luck and these guys coming out in the draft.
He was on the broadcast. I mean,
he was
John
awesome.
Kept it real.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went up there calling like that. Well, you know, the referee, no. If they call a bad penalty, he talked about it. I loved it.
Yeah, he was not afraid to let you know what he was thinking. Well, Jaden Daniels joined John Gruden on YouTube this past week, and so I want to hear a little bit of what he had to say. He talked about how the routine for Jaden has made him successful and what he was able to do this season.
Isn't getting on a routine one of the key ingredients to being successful?
Oh, that's the biggest thing. Like consistency, you know, consistency is the biggest thing in this league. And having a consistent routine, obviously you got to redefine it each and every year as you get older. But finding your routine as fast as possible, I mean, that's probably going to set you up for the most success in the long run.
How hard is it to find that routine, B. Mitch? Like when you're getting into the league and figuring out what you need to do week to week, is it something that you kind of figure out, you follow some of the vets in your rookie year, or is it you kind of figure it out yourself as the years go on, and then by year four, year five, year six,
well,
you kind of have it down?
For me, I came in and I began to watch other people and try to just imitate what they were doing.
Sure.
But then as you get older, you begin to find yourself trying to do the same things at the same time. You know, maybe getting to sleep at a certain time, eating at a certain time. You get to work. My day is going to start off in the morning where am I going to work out or am I going to look at some film? You know, whatever that is, you try to consistently do it. And it works. It's just like, you know, the whole thing I always say about if you do something over and over again, it just becomes a reaction instead of a thought. Because on the football field, if you're thinking, you're in trouble. You know, things got to become a reaction. And you watch Jaden. I watch him come out on the field. He goes through the same thing with the basketball and the tennis ball. And he goes and he does stuff by the kicker's net where he's throwing stuff into the net. And a lot of people may be looking at it that don't understand anything of what's going on. But it translates to the game for him. And the whole basketball thing, you know, I always wonder, like, what the hell is the basketball? You see him when he shoots, it gets your wrists even a little bit more limber and loose and things like that. So trying to have the routine be exactly the same over and over again, it becomes second nature. Like I tell people about dieting. Make something a lifestyle change instead of like something you're going to just do just to get into a dress or get into a pair of pants. If you do it every day the same way, it doesn't become something different or a chore. It just happens.
Yeah, how much does it impact you when you have a difference of a routine where you have to make a change, whether it's a short week, longer week, whatever it is? Because I know for me, I was never at a high level, but playing golf, right? Uh-huh. Like you obviously have a pre-shot routine. You go through it because you want to be able to, whether it's, You know, you're down by one on the 72nd hole of a tournament, or you're just teeing it up randomly on a random Saturday and you're just having some fun. You want to have the same routine so it feels the same, right? You get into the same rhythm. But how much does it change when something makes you change your routine?
So if you got a Thursday game instead of a Sunday game, you're talking about the game is 3 days earlier. What you do is that Tuesday, Monday, you start doing stuff going into that Thursday and you run right into the game. If the game is at night instead of being in the daytime. Like when the game was at 1, I wake up in the morning, boom, and my day was already rolling. But if it's at night, you wake up in the morning, you have to make sure you don't, like, I will take that nap, and I wake up about the same amount of time I would wake up prior to a 1 o'clock game. And then you start having everything rotate again. It's not that you have to do it exactly the same time every week. It's the timing of it. When you start doing things to build you up to a game, when you start doing things to get you ready for that actual practice that day, you know, and if you do those things like that, your body catches on. It knows at that point, like, okay, this is the day we're getting into action, or we're just going to practice today.
I like this from Jaden Daniels, cut number 4, where he was talking about how, you know, he had a great rookie season and he was one of the best players in the National Football League, a top 5 quarterback in the league. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't still have to prove himself year after year after year.
Now I know every team in the league has made you the number one offseason project. You know these coaches are sitting in there day in, day out, studying you. How does that motivate you, and what does that make you feel like?
I just think as a competitor, you're always trying to find little ways to get better. And for me, it's like last year, that's great. But it's a whole new year now, and I still got to go out there. I got to prove myself to my teammates, the organization, each and every day that I'm getting better. And then when it's time to prepare and when those games come, I got to know that, hey, how can I eliminate some tendencies, you know, stuff like that, because that's the big thing. You know, coaches are already trying to find tendencies of what this player is going to do so they can anticipate it and hopefully get you in that situation.
You're like a coach's dream, man. You know that?
I mean, he sounds like a guy, B. Mitch, that when we get 20, 25, 30 years down the road, we're going to be listening to these sorts of clips as someone that is an all-time great, right? As someone that you fall in love with because he has accomplished so much for this football team.
Oh, totally, totally. But the thing he's talking about, I speak about this a lot, where everyone talks about watching film of the other team. He's talking about watching film of himself. He said, find out tendencies you're giving off. And if you can pick up your tendencies that you're giving off, something that you do every time, then you can switch it up or you can use it to make them think you're about to do something when you're finna do something else. Ernest Biner would always tell me, he said, man, I noticed right before the ball snap, you look right where you're going. So I used to like look around, boom, right before the ball snap. He said, if you do it every time, they will be waiting for you. So you start looking, look here, going there. Or look over here, but you're going up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You find ways to try to make people, like I would play against kickers, and what I did, I watched the kicker. And if you watch a punter, kicker, you watch where they line up, you know exactly where the ball is being kicked. To kick the ball to the right, they have to start farther over to their left, and they go up, and then they come at the ball. To kick it to their left, they're like close to the ball where they could just pull it over to the left. So what you do, you line up right where they are kicking it at. They now have to try and adjust to try to fool you, and it'll mess them up.
Mm-hmm.
Or you line up where they don't, you make them think you don't know what the hell they're doing. And then you just, as soon as they get close to the ball, you take off. Now you catch the ball and you come at it. You know, we would go out there with 2 returns based on where they're kicking. And I would wait. And then I would call a number, and then the people in the front of me would begin to just shoot the number all the way to the front. And we knew going right or left or even going in the middle. You got to find ways to pick up on them and also make sure they can't pick up on you.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to hear a guy that had a successful rookie season, and he's been like this since he's been drafted. He's as humble as could be. He understands that this isn't something where, how many guys have had rookie seasons that were really, really good and then never did anything afterwards?
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be one of those guys.
Right. Don't stay stagnant. And the thing about what I love about Jaden plays this game in a way most people don't even know. his mom made a comment to me and Santana about what he does. I love it. People just say he's out there just laughing. He laughing because he cracking jokes on people. He having fun. He getting under their skin.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to be able to do that.
Yeah, he stays calm under pressure. And the other thing, too, about it is he prepares, but he's not someone out there that has to tell you how hard he's working. Man. Everyone else will tell you how hard he's working.
After the game is over, you know he's been working hard.
But exactly right. He's not one that has to tell you. I want to hear some of the rest of Jaden Daniels' audio also.
I was surrounded by Commanders last night at the game.
Mm-hmm.
They were all around me.
Pretty neat.
What a turnout of Commanders players. I don't even know how the Caps were able to scrounge up that many tickets because they're hot commodity at this point, and the place is absolutely packed. But the same seats that Jake Irvin and Mackenzie Gore were sitting in on the glass one night earlier that are clearly like Caps tickets on the glass or whatever were given to the quarterback room. So Jaden Daniels, Marcus Mariota, and Sam Hartman sat right on the glass, pounding the glass, and they were like catty-cornered from me through the glass right around the bend, like 10 feet away if you could go, you know, straight across. And so I was watching them for much of the night. I was not only watching the Capitals, I was watching Jaden Daniels watch the Capitals. But I posted a bunch of videos, if you want to go check them out, at Grant H. Paulson, reaction shots when they won or scored to Jaden. I'm not sure anyone's ever had more fun at a hockey game. The next time I see him, I've got to ask him. I'm sure he's been to a game or two since he got to D.C., or he's been to games before. Like, what his experience has been with hockey in the past. I'm just telling you, he loved the atmosphere. I don't have to ask him. He was jumping around and waving his towel. The Unleash the Fury bit that they do in the third period, mm-hmm. which is one of the great relics in D.C. sports. If you guys aren't familiar, generally with about 4 to 6 minutes to go in the third period at a stoppage in play, but oftentimes whenever they need a boost, if things are getting sideways or squirrely, anytime in the middle of the third, they play their hype-up video that gets everyone out of their seats. You're told to stand up and you start clapping and then everyone screams Unleash the Fury with Tom Green from the movie Road Trip way back in the day. And the whole building is bedlam. It's the loudest it is at any point for any Capitals game. And they do it right before they drop the puck. And there's just this great momentum that carries over into the game often. But if you've never experienced it or seen it before, whenever I bring someone new to a Caps game, I always make sure we're in our seats and I say, hey, watch the board here. This is Unleash the Fury. Like, this is the thing. And so I was looking over, like, I'm hoping Jaden's paying attention. And you could just tell he loved it. He was jumping around.
He's probably like, what movie is this?
Thought it was the coolest thing.
Yeah, I've never seen it. It came out a long time ago because it's older than me. But yeah, dude, that's so cool. Watching people experience stuff like that for the first time.
Yep.
You know, like, I know it sounds kind of dorky, but like watching my son watch Star Wars for the first time and be like, wow, like it's so cool. Those sorts of things are actually like priceless. So like those guys, you know, like Sam Hartman, I think it was Mariota was sitting next to him as well. It was the quarterback room, right?
All three of them.
Yeah. It's like seeing those guys hang out on the glass at a Capitals game, watching a playoff game in person like that for the first time, probably. That's cool.
Trent Scott was directly behind me, one row behind me, with three of the linemen. Trent Scott, who is a swing tackle, but mm-hmm. he caught the first ever touchdown.
Jaden Daniels study,
from Jaden Daniels, which could be a trivia question for years to come, because it was a tackle-eligible play against the Bengals in week two. And I kept turning around to him and watching him. He was getting amped up, but I was like, we got to get you out there, hit some people. He's like, let's go. But yeah, the Commanders were everywhere. There was a great photo they posted. They must have had about 15 players there total. I think it was the entire offensive line, and they were scattered around the arena, and then the three quarterbacks. I don't know that any other position groups went or how they divvied it up, but I bet they brought a whole party bus from Ashburn.
That's so fun, man.
And the Caps got them all jerseys, and they were, man, they really enjoyed themselves.
Having a grand old time. Love it.
But I know fans get excited for this. I just think it's really healthy, and it actually is beneficial when the sports teams support one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Nats,
I love it.
40% of their rotation was on the glass the night before wearing Caps gear. Now you've got the Commanders. You want to see that. At a game I was at very recently, it might have been the 894 Ovi game, actually,
okay.
when he tied the record. Bilal Coulibaly was sitting a couple rows over from me.
Awesome.
From the Wizards at his home arena.
Right. You know, he knows the way around there. Yeah.
No longer hardwood, it's ice, but I can't get enough of that.
I love that. I eat it up. And I know it's probably, you know, a little bit theater. I know it's probably a little bit naive, where I just want to pretend that they're all
some
friends.
Some of it is like, hey, be here at this time. We're going to hand you a jersey. You stand up. But they did it in a good way. Like, in the first period, they came to those guys. And Jaden, as you know, is just royalty in this town.
Mm-hmm.
So it was electric. I mean, the response he got was one of the loudest pops of the entire night. Maybe it was for Hartman and Mariota. I guess I'm not sure because all three of them were on camera. Mm-hmm. Sam Hartman's very handsome.
Handsome.
Could have been a lot of women screaming. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
If it was higher pitch for when he was introduced,
exactly.
Maybe.
Exactly. Yeah. So he got on the mic and got everyone going, tried to cut a promo. But they did a cool thing where they all three signed a football and then launched it into the crowd all over the different like places they had chosen. Mm-hmm. So Jaden's throwing it, you know, 30 rows up to the right, and Sam's lobbing one over. Mariota scrambled.
Ran it. Yeah. Thank you.
we both were on
same
that
same joke there. Yeah.
But all three of them threw a football, which was good. But what I wanted to bring up real quick about Jaden before we move on from that element of the game last night, I found this amazing. So he was sitting in the front row. They showed him on the camera in the first period, and it's the worst-kept secret in the world. As soon as word gets out by one or two people noticing you that are just sitting around you, it's going to spread like wildfire, right? So to the point where in stoppages, like people were coming up, and he'd kind of lean over and take a little picture if they were nearby. But what normally happens in these situations with a player of this magnitude, I've seen this a million times, a security guard or somebody will just escort you up the aisle before the end of the period. So with like a minute left in the period or whatever, so that you're not trying to walk up when everyone else is walking up, because it's a packed arena.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Shoulder to shoulder, there's no open seats. You just get escorted out of there and you wave like a princess in the parade or whatever, and you just go hide out in a suite or do, you know, somewhere else, right? Not only did he not get escorted out before the end of the period, he stood there in the intermission, which spans between like 18, 19 minutes, and took pictures with hundreds of people. And it was a madhouse. Like, I honestly think it was a security concern. They had our buddy Charlie Moulet from PR mm-hmm. with them. But until, like, I don't know, 15, 18 minutes after the end of the period, right before the end of intermission, I didn't see one security guard come down. They eventually got someone come down. Like, the whole section and kids from all over and people from all over the arena, it was like a big receiving line. We're walking down to the front to get these pictures and to hang out. And Daniels, to his credit, he must have taken hundreds of photos. And at one point, like, went up and was in different rows shaking hands. And I mean, he just hung out.
Yeah, because you'd be forgiven if it's like, hey, I got to run to the restroom. I've been sitting in my seat, you know, for whatever.
You'd be forgiven if that, which is probably not a fun, borderline miserable experience for him, because it's every night and it's constant. If you just didn't want to do that, and you just said, I just want to be a guy at a hockey game with my buddies. I don't want to do this. And you just go sit in a suite.
Yeah.
He just chilled and wore it and was the belle of the ball, and I couldn't believe it.
Elect him mayor, please.
Yeah.
Whenever that football thing is done, please be in charge of stuff.
He's a good kid.
Yeah. I wouldn't have the patience for that, even at my age. But just to that point, just real quick from before, the local guys supporting each other and the different, whether they become friends or are kind of going through similar stuff. I know one of my favorite all-time sports memories is a hammered Max Scherzer and a hammered Ryan Zimmerman wearing like fireman's gear, cap stuff, holding the full deals, yelling Unleash the Fury or Let's Go Caps, that kind of thing, like where it felt authentic, not just, hey, I kind of played golf with TJ Oshie at a charity event one time, I'll swing by a game. But when it like feels that we're all pulling in the same direction and you like the same things that I like, to your point, it builds and it becomes this community thing. It's not adversarial anymore where you're competing for everyone's attention. It's the high tide raises all the boats, and that's how it feels.
I think Will in Stafford was at the game last night. He swung by City Tap House.
We saw Will.
Yeah, hung out with him for a bit. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Hey, guys. Good seeing you all. Doing good, man. Good seeing you all yesterday, meeting you guys. And the crab and corn hush puppies were great at the Tap House last night.
I agree. They're so good.
Yeah, but I was going to tell you, Grant, I was in the section between you and Jaden in the QB room, about 10 rows off the glass.
Okay.
And I was there was the wives and girlfriends on one side of us, and then a group of ladies on the other side in different coats. And it turned out I was sitting next to Coach Carberry's wife, nicest lady, you know, real nice, real pleasant to talk to. And I told her, you know, your husband's been great, and you know, brought a breath of fresh air to the city, you know, but she was real cool. But Luke McCaffrey came up and sat like right on her end, got pictures with him. You know, it was I almost found myself paying more attention to those guys in the actual game, which I never thought would happen.
Yeah, but it's funny.
No, it was great time.
Appreciate you, bro. Good call. Yeah, I was, like I said, I was watching the game, but I was also watching them watch the game.
Mm-hmm.
Who loves Spencer Carberry more, his wife or me? Because she gets mad at him, I bet, for just daily things.
Yeah, like being a husband. Like, you have annoying habits.
Like, my wife doesn't like me that much. Your wife can't stand you, I'm sure, same way as my wife hates me.
Well, loves me, but doesn't like me very much.
Yeah, she'll love you, but she doesn't like you.
Right.
Same with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder. Like, I probably like Carberry more than his wife.
Because we're the negatives for you.
I don't have any.
You see what I'm saying?
Zero.
Like, she's got stuff that's like, God, I wish he wouldn't clear his throat that way.
Doesn't matter.
Or lets the dishes soak. Or, you know, has multiple glasses of water around the house. That does, none of those things bother you.
No. He gives a great post-game after a win speech.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets the game puck? Let's give it to Logan tonight, huh? JR in Boston. What's up?
What's up, fellas? Listen, Grant, I have to say that you were right. I kept calling in before the playoffs started and was concerned how they just weren't playing well for the last month. And the last two games, they have come out and proven, and you're right, that they can flip the switch. I didn't think that was even possible. They've come out and dominated. But, like, what drives me crazy and, like, my big concern of, like, things from the past is the fact that when it comes to high danger chances, especially after they scored two goals in 60 seconds, whatever, they dominated like the next 10 minutes and should have had another two or three goals. Both these games,
totally,
when it comes to high danger chances and skill and everything else, should have been like 5-1, 5-2. It was all Caps. But like, that's why we love and hate hockey all the same, because it's the only sport where you can dominate 70% of the game and still lose.
It's the best and the worst, isn't it?
All at the same time.
Thanks for the call, man. Yeah, no claiming victory just yet. I mean, if they lose the series, it won't be because they couldn't flip the switch. But
and that was kind of my point after game one. It's the thing that I was worried about, I'm not worried about anymore. Now, just does Logan Thompson make the incredible save or not?
Now it's the hockey
regular
playoffs.
Hockey. Yep.
And they're up 2-0, but they got a lot of work to do. What would you guess high danger chances have been between the two teams so far, the discrepancy?
In my mind, it's even, but maybe that's stupid.
Take a guess through two games.
10-10.
31-17 Caps over the Canadiens. Almost 2-1.
See, it doesn't feel like that way because the last part of each game
exactly
is that way. By the way, I undershot by a lot. How about that?
Something Adam Peters said about Josh Connerly against the Big Ten's biggest opponents coming up in a second. But Mike Tice, do you remember Mike Tice? Mike Tice played many years in the NFL as a tight end, played in Seattle for several years, played here for a year, played in Minnesota, and then ended up becoming a head coach of the Vikings for about four seasons, and then stayed in the league as an OC and as an offensive line coach for years. By the way, if you didn't know this about Mike Tice, he was a quarterback in college at Maryland. He was a 6'7" quarterback in college at Maryland in the late 70s, early 80s, before Boomer Esiason arrived, and then became a tight end in the pros. Anyway, he was on a podcast that I think his son was doing last night for the draft. He loved Josh Connerly. This is a longtime offensive head coach, coordinator, and O-line coach Mike Tice talking about Josh Connerly.
Period. Number one offensive lineman in this draft for me. Again, I don't do it full time like everybody else does. I was given this special assignment, so I'm doing this special assignment. But
family favor.
I didn't get a chance to look it up, but whoever's the O-line coach at Oregon has done a tremendous job. This kid plays with great technique in all areas of the game. Pass sets, run game, out in space, footwork, down blocks, hand usage. This guy has a lot of traits. When you have that many good traits, you're a first half of the first round for player. You're because he has so many good traits, that to me makes this guy a premier offensive tackle in this year's draft. I really like this player. There's not a lot to not like about him, unless he's got some blemish or some acne that I don't know about.
There you go. About as high a praise from a former NFL, coach and player as you can get on Josh Connerly Jr. So there were a couple of other sound bites from Adam Peters that I wanted to play. The first one was just the idea that Ben talked about, and I don't know, maybe this was Ben's question. Sorry if I didn't know this going in. But Ben brought up the fact that, you know, we had a run on offensive linemen in the first round, in part because there was a big drop-off after, say, 7, 8, 9 guys, and then the rest of the tackles in particular. And he was asked about sort of the draft depth at that position and how it impacted the selection of Connerly Jr. Here's what he said.
Yeah, you always look at that. I think that's a good question. And yeah, we did think that, after Josh, you know, there was going to be a little bit of a dip in terms of the guys that we really liked. And it wasn't a huge dip, but you're right. You do look across the board and say, okay, we can get these guys later. That shouldn't be the driver of your decision, but it also makes for, you know, you to feel more comfortable about doing that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you don't want it to be the full driver of your decision, because then you're really thinking more need, right? If you're like, well, the tackles aren't going to be there until the fourth or fifth round, there's such a big disparity, we got to take a tackle now. It should be about best player available, which it was, but if it's close with another best player available, and let's just say it came at the edge position, defensive end position, well, that position, according to everybody, is deep. And you're going to be able to get one in the second round, the third round, the fourth round in this draft. But Ben mentioned something that I didn't consider. I think the Chiefs were always looking at O-line. And Connerly Jr. had been actually mocked to Kansas City several times, which I went back and looked at after last night. But Ben suggested that maybe the trading partner would be the team that would have taken Connerly Jr. at 29. So Peters didn't want to risk it. He wanted to, you know, stick where he was instead of accepting an offer to trade back and hope that he would be there. This was a question just about the overall emphasis on defense, and certainly I would say that most fans, most of us, believed that going into this offseason, defense would be the focus. In the draft, defense might be a big part of the focus, certainly an edge rusher, an edge run stopper. Here's what he said with respect to pressure in this draft to get defense.
I think it's just looking at our board and picking the highest player on our board. So I don't think there's any pressure to pick a defensive guy, except I'd feel bad for Joe Witt a little bit, but he was extremely supportive of this pick too. He's a great team guy, all jokes aside. But no, there's no real pressure to do that, to force a pick on the defensive side of the ball. It's just trying to pick the best commander for us.
There you go. They do need defense, but then again, maybe they feel like they did a lot in the offseason heading into the draft in free agency, and they like maybe what they have coming back. That's always something. We've talked about this for a while. The whole idea that last year's draft is already kind of in the books in terms of what they have, that's just false. Most rookie players don't make their big impact, if they're going to make a big impact, in their first season. So what they think of Johnny Newton and Jordan McGee and Dominique Hampton and Javonte John-Baptiste, who I was told a couple of times last year they actually liked the player, and he got some run, remember, in some games during the course of the year. That draft, last year's draft, often ends up being the creator of your new contributors the next year. And the guys you draft this year then end up being more contributors the following year. Of course, you want your first rounder to be able to contribute right away. You'd like your second rounder to be able to contribute right away. In Washington's case last year, their first pick obviously contributed in a major way, and two of their three second-round picks contributed. Newton and, of course, Mikey Sanders still, who had an excellent rookie season. This was Adam Peters back on Josh Connerly talking about the top talent that he faced during his college career, specifically in the Big Ten.
Yeah, that's a great question. That was something I was actually – I failed to mention when I started the presser. But I think, you know, one, the way he competed against Abdul Carter, he went toe-to-toe with Abdul Carter, who's the best pass rusher in the draft. He did really well. And he did really well against a lot of really good players. He, you know, played Ohio State twice, and they were getting the break speed off in the second game, and he was still competing to the very last second, and that showed a lot. And just so those types of things you see in them. When we have metrics where our R&D does department does a great job of giving us metrics, how do they perform against high draftable players? And so he performed really high against high draftable players, and that lined up with what our eyes saw. And so those things make you really not just his skill, but the fact that he will go toe-to-toe with those guys. He's not going to freak out. He's not going to panic. He's not going to do things that he doesn't normally do when he's, you know, face-to-face with a really great player.
There you go. Two things about that. Abdul Carter, he actually dominated, all right, just so you know, in the Big Ten title game. JT Tuimoloau from Ohio State, he faced twice. Ohio State got the better of Oregon, you know, big time in the second game, in the playoff game. But he played great players in the Big Ten. There were a couple of other players that he played that were really good in the Big Ten as well. But I also wanted to mention this part of his quote, because I always find this interesting, because I know coaches and scouts really evaluate players and how they play in games that are out of control score-wise, especially when you're on the team that's losing. And he said he played Ohio State twice, and they were getting the break speed off them in the second game, and that was in the playoff game. Remember, Ohio State just absolutely buried them in that playoff game. It was 34-7 or whatever before Oregon knew it. 41-22 or something like that was the final score. And he said, and yet he was still competing to the very last second, and that showed a light, showed a lot. Those types of things you see in them. That is Dan Quinn and Adam Peters, man, to a T. That's what they didn't like about Jahan Dotson last year. They didn't like that he wasn't playing to the whistle on every single play. They traded him. They're looking for those, you know, qualities. I'm not saying that that should be the driving quality. It isn't. But they want competitors, man. They want dudes that are playing the entire way and aren't looking at the scoreboard and saying, yeah, I'm done. And the idea that he played well, and the R&D department does a great job of sort of evaluating how they do against other highly draftable players, and that he lined up and dominated Abdul Carter, was obviously promising in their eyes. I think they got a good player. I mean, time will tell. Who knows? He's not going to play left tackle. He's not going to go up, you know, week in and week out against the other team's best player. It doesn't always break that way. And you just never know. And these positions in particular are always tough. All the positions are, but they drafted a guy that they love from a competitive standpoint, from an athletic standpoint, and they felt they still needed to invest in the protection of their quarterback and I think this is important, invest in their ability to be more versatile in the run game. You know, getting better opportunities for people other than the quarterback to run the football.
Coming up a bit later on the show, Mike Jones, NFL writer for The Athletic, will join us, as will Chris Russell, host of The Chris Russell Show on Team 980. He'll be on the show at 9:20. But right now, let's head out to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We'll say good morning to Grant Paulson from Grant and Danny. You can see them. They're taking the show on the road to Pupitella in Chantilly from 2 until 6:30 p.m. today. Go hang out with the boys. Go get some dinner. Get ready for day 2 of the NFL draft and game 3 of Caps Canadiens. What's up, Grant?
One. What's up, fellas? How are the junks this morning?
We are doing
GP,
well.
Good. GP, when you're at Pupitella, get some meatballs. Their meatballs are spectacular.
Guy, you think I'm not thinking about meatballs for the last 4 days?
Yeah, I'm glad you
He's definitely already pre-planned
it. It's a good one.
Just so much pizza, so much draft talk. Mm-hmm. This is going to be an amazing day.
Now, you're going to be at the Pupitella in
Chantilly.
Chantilly? Nice.
Yeah, that's right. Perfect. Hanging out with listeners. It's actually, we got the trifecta today, right?
Okay,
because
yep.
You got the NFL draft continuing with the Commanders needing to do some moving and shaking here.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Caps playing game three tonight, looking to go up 3-0 in Montreal. And then Juan Soto's back in town with the Mets.
That's right.
To take on the Nationals. And James Woods, one of the National League leaders with 8 bolts already.
Pretty nice.
Things are looking up.
Very good. So what was your initial impression last night? I think like most people around here, we are all kind of thinking, well, okay, they're going to probably draft an edge rusher or a corner, maybe an outside shot at, you know, jolting the receiving core or something. I didn't really have tackle on my board, but I get it. And I, for some reason, I have a bizarre trust in this group right now.
So let me ask you guys this real quick before I even answer that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have one guest say Josh Connerly's name to
you
about the commander?
Not that I can recall. No. And I talked about this too, Grant. Like,
yeah.
I was listening to GND driving around, and you guys did the montage of, you know, everybody at the station and people that covered the team. And I don't think I heard Josh Connerly's name once. Maybe one, but it was like 20 people. And
maybe this is a product of them being 29, Cakesy.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's just never in my lifetime have they not traded back or something picked that late. But this has not happened. Danny and I have been doing the show since 14. Obviously, I was on the beat before that, where we talk about the draft ad nauseum, you know, for months, just like, here's what they could do. We do the same things over and over, right? His name did not come up as a pick for them one time from anybody.
I don't think it came up on this show either.
It didn't.
Not that I can recall.
That's wild. But Peters operates in the shadows. The Laremy Tunsil trade came out of nowhere. So I guess to answer your question, Eric, it was not on my radar either. It certainly makes sense, though, right? And while I would have preferred to go BPA at a bigger position of need, because I actually think you can make the case, not only is tackle not their biggest need, I said last night, I don't think it was a top five need. Now, I think Andrew Wiley is a very average at best right tackle, so you could clearly upgrade from him. But I thought they were going to, because Brandon Coleman, who they drafted in the third round last year and started at left tackle, I thought was going to kick over to the right side. That's what Dan Quinn said. He didn't specify tackle. That was definitely the assumption. Peters made it seem like he'd compete with Wiley. So I thought that competition would elevate that spot. But here's what you do now. In one fell swoop this offseason, after finding your franchise quarterback last year, you've got your bookend left tackle and right tackle in Tunsil and Connerly. You've kicked Coleman inside, where he played a lot of guard in college. He could be your left guard of the future. When Cosme comes back, he's your right guard. In the meantime, Wiley played some guard with Kansas City, so he could play there. Could be a backup tackle. So you've really upgraded four spots with two moves, essentially. And I'm just never going to be upset when you take protecting Jaden Daniels very seriously. So it's not a move you can dislike, even if it's unsexy.
Yeah, and Grant, heading into round two, like, if they don't move off the pick at 61, like, I literally have no idea, like, who they're dialing in on. It would be crazy to think, okay, I know what Adam Peters is going to do 30 picks from now.
Yeah.
Like, I have no idea where they're going to head.
And I said the same thing.
The next pick.
Last year, like, sort of the order and way they picked guys was not intuitive to me. I remember that specifically.
Well, remember last year in the second round, Johnny Newton's name wasn't really on the board either. Yeah, that was a surprise.
It was they picked guys. Like, I don't know. I don't know the process, but I do. They have earned the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah,
definitely have. I don't even like admitting this, but I mean, it just is what it is. Like, I have never been less plugged in on their thinking or how they do things in my life. Like, people keep saying, what do you think they're going to do? And for years, I would either, you know, somebody would be not leaking, but giving you an idea of how they're thinking. Mm-hmm. They just don't really do that anymore internally. I mean, they are very comfortable in their own skin, operating the way they want to. They're not kind of putting out feelers or getting the word out via the media and floating things as trial balloons up in the air. They just kind of do what they want to do, and you're either on board or you're not. So, yeah, they have one more pick before 128 now in the fourth round at 26th in round four. So you're basically talking about what is essentially a fifth-round pick. I think you've got to do everything you can to move back at that spot just to add more selections. But you're right, Cakes. I mean, they could go – they need weapons, right? So if they only make that pick and do nothing else, you could – need. You could go running back. You could go wide receiver. They may just say, we don't have a choice but to address the pass rushing need because we can't get enough pass rush with this group at the edge. Mm-hmm. They definitely need cornerback help. It's hilarious because they're in the NFC title game last year, guys, and they do have a lot of needs, which speaks to how dynamic Jaden was to mask a lot of deficiencies.
Yeah, so do you have any sense, like, I mean, just any sense of where they might lean, just kind of based on what might be more available now based on how the first round played out?
Right. So their actions tell us, right, because there are no words, as I said, coming out. Their actions were, if you remember, they did try to trade for Trey Hendrickson at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that they need edge help. Trey Hendrickson's also still intriguing to me. I don't know what the latest is with him in Cincinnati, but they did take a starting defensive end.
Yeah, doesn't seem great.
So is that a situation where you pick the phone back up if you're Adam Peters and you say, okay, obviously you guys couldn't get a first-round pick. He's going into what is likely his final year there. Maybe it's 61 and something next year, and you go get a 15-sack defensive end. Is that something he would try to do? If you can't pull off something to get a starting veteran edge, then I think you come back from 61 and you try to have two picks before 128, because then you can address a defensive need and still get one of those weapons. I think they need a running back with speed badly. I really like Bashel Tootin from Virginia Tech, possibly, mm-hmm. In the third round, if they could do that. But I would try to have two picks tonight in rounds 2 and 3. And I feel like if you could do that and hit a couple of the needs now, you've won early on.
Getting back to Connolly for a bit, I mean, we're just seeing clips now of him getting direct snaps and running the ball in. We're seeing clips of him being tackle eligible and catching mm-hmm. touchdowns. Like, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury,
he's an athlete, man. Yeah.
He's gonna work some magic with an offensive lineman, I would think.
Uber athletic, right? At the Caps game, game 2, Trent Scott was sitting right behind me. He was mm-hmm. like their tackle eligible, mm-hmm. who's the answer to the greatest trivia question in Commanders history, which is who caught the first ever touchdown pass from Jaden Daniels, because he is the offensive lineman mm-hmm. against the Bengals. But, yeah, you don't think Cliff wants to get in his bag a little bit with an athletic tackle? Have you guys seen this kid Connerly's face, by the way?
Yeah.
He's so young.
I just saw him. Yeah. He looked like he was 15.
80. I feel 80. He looks 9, this kid.
I know.
Right. It is. I mean, I know I'm now at the age where these guys were like, I was a junior or senior in high school when they were being born. But even by the standard of, like, players are young now, the kid looks 15. Yeah. But he moves really, really well. He was actually, like, fairly decent, I think, like running back at one point, late high school, transition to the line. He's a monster kid. And he's so young. And the one thing I kept hearing last night when I was just after the pick asking people, because, as I said, I just didn't do much research on any of the linemen, was there's so much projectability. Like, Kiper said on the telecast, and I think this is the consensus thought, whether it's top 5, top 10, if he went back to school and came out next year, mm-hmm. he would have been the offensive tackle in the top 10 that everybody was talking about. Mm-hmm. So they just pounce a year early and get a guy that they think's a plug-and-play right tackle for years to come.
Yeah, I saw you retweeted Mike Tice, the former Vikings and I believe Jaguars coach, that he was basically saying that he thought Connolly was the best offensive lineman in the draft.
Mm. I think it's one of those things where, depending on the scout, if you want to use that mm-hmm. word, and in this case, he's the scout. Like, depending on the person that's watching the tape, what are you looking for? And if you like the size and the length and the fluidity and the footwork and someone that, again, is projecting out, that athlete, you know, Trent Williams who's going between the legs and dunking in basketball or whatever, then this is the kind of guy that you could sign up for. And obviously Cliff Kingsbury was all in. I'm sure you guys have seen the video that the Commanders put mm-hmm. out
yep.
overnight you talked about. But, you know, Peters has the sheet that was left on his desk, basically straight out of draft day, where Vontae Mack, no matter what, right, where he says, I want the left tackle from Oregon. So they went and got the kid. They've got an upgrade, not only at right tackle now, but I think it helps them on the interior. Because I was a little surprised they didn't do more at guard in free agency. But if you look at it, you kind of did, because now you've added Brandon Coleman at guard.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to move Wiley to guard, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Trent Scott's still in the organization who played a bunch of tackle for them.
I think they're kind of loaded, actually, yeah. offensive line.
It's one of their strengths now.
How out there yeah. I say that. You know, the other thing I think it's becoming quite obvious is it's important to them to be a bigger, stronger football team. Like, they want to be – they added size, as far as I'm concerned, especially when you think about Kinlaw, and that's all they talked about is how big that guy is. I don't know. That seems to be something that's important to this group.
No, that's a good point, especially up front, right? I mean, Laramie Tunsil is 6'5". Like, he is huge. He's got length. Also, it's interesting to me, and I'll be curious. I just, again, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I have a great file on Connerly as a player, but Oregon threw the football a ton, right? Laramie Tunsil is a pass protection first offensive lineman. I don't want to call him finesse, but he's not like nasty and dirty. I'll be curious to see Connerly's what the reports are on him in that regard, because I'd imagine they feel really good about him in pass pro. But you need that nasty streak. You need to be able to run the football too. That's certainly not as much of a strength for Tunsil. So that's something I'm a little bit curious about. But he does feel almost Tunsil-esque in that way. It's almost like maybe that's what they're looking at the tackle position.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they stay at 61 or, like you said, trade out and add a couple pieces. You know, if Luther Burden, if they really like Luther Burden and he slips down to 61, they might jump all over it.
So that's the question, right? Bish is like, if you get one of those guys that falls,
yeah.
Now all of a sudden the trade back, which seems inevitable or almost a necessity. I don't know. Could you guys feel okay if they don't move back, they make another pick, and then they don't pick again until the end of the fourth round? Does that work for you?
I've kind of argued that I'm okay with it. Now, listen, I'm just a dummy. But they did so much in the offseason via free agency, and we know they're going to sign 25 guys via free agency 10 seconds after the draft anyway. I mean, they're going to have and some of those guys are going to make the team. They're going to sign some. So I'm kind of okay with it. I don't know.
I'm just starting to talk myself into the possibility. There's going to be a position group going in that we don't like on paper. But that happened last year, two or three spots, and they got to the NFC title game. So whether, you know, I'd like it to not be edge. I just don't know where the pass rush is coming from. My guess at this point is that they would say they're going to use Frankie Louvu coming downhill off the edge more, who was an outstanding rusher, both in Carolina, and we saw it last year. He finished second on the team, narrowly behind Fowler and sacks. But you lost 10-plus from Fowler. He just wasn't as impactful as the sack totals. Like, everything positive, essentially, that he did, other than the pick six at home 1 week, was a sack. The pressures otherwise, the TFLs weren't that high. So I don't think replacing him is going to be as arduous as people think. But you do need someone who can get home, and maybe they're going to plan on, you know, if we see them, say, take a linebacker off ball earlier than we think, maybe whether that's in round three, if they trade back, or in round two somehow. People go, what the heck was that? Maybe the point is that Louvu stands up off the edge on passing downs, and so he goes and gets you 11 or 12
sacks.
Can I
understand? Yeah. I'm sorry. Maybe I misheard you.
Yeah.
So are you saying, you're saying you hope it's not an edge guy they select?
No. I'm saying I'm talking myself into the possibility that they might just not be able to. I want them to go get an edge. That was my preference,
okay.
Especially when the guys fell into their lap. I'm just saying Louvu is an outstanding pass rusher.
Yeah.
And while we think of him as this off-ball linebacker, maybe that's their plan. I'm trying to figure out, like, where are the sacks coming from?
Mm-hmm.
If I think Dorrance Armstrong is probably, like, more of a 7, 8, 9 sack guy, and, you know, Frankie Louvu could get you 10, 11 in a perfect year coming up, like, is that enough? Like, where else do they come from? And that's kind of my concern at this point.
Are you with me? I'm very heavily leaning towards the Lattimore thing as a disaster.
I'm trying to talk it into him. It's a little too early to give up on Lattimore.
And I think that that's fair. But I do think it's their biggest red flag to date.
Oh, it's by far, as of this moment, their biggest miss.
Yeah.
But I tend to give the benefit of the doubt to the fact that, here is what is a fact, irrefutable. He was hurt when they acquired him.
Mm-hmm.
He was chasing his tail, basically trying to get healthy, and never really looked healthy to me. He didn't run that well, I didn't think, at any point, like turning and running with receivers. And then he's learning a new system and getting acclimated. So those are all excuses for why he played bad. The result was he played really, really bad. Mm-hmm. And they gave up a lot. I mean, you give up that, and then not only does he play that well, but then you double down when you could have gotten out of the contract, which I had no problem with. I would have done the exact same thing. But you need him to be really, really good. So to your point, yeah, if it's a struggle again this year and Lattimore's washed or they just guessed wrong, well, not only is it a big problem and a miss for them, and a rare miss because they haven't missed much, as you said, but now, corner is also a bit of a fiasco on paper, right? Because it's Mikey Sanra still and Jonathan Jones and not much else. But I tend to think the truth is in the middle. Like, I think we've seen him play his best football. He's not going to be a Pro Bowler every year or an All-Pro again. But also, I think he's got to be better than last year. I can't imagine we're going to see that again. That was bad.
Grant, we appreciate the time early. People should go out and see Grant and Danny today at Pupitella in Chantilly.
Pupitella,
2
baby.
Until 6:30. There's a lot of D.C. sports on deck, as Grant mentioned Pupitella. At the top of the interview. Thanks, Grant. We'll talk to you soon, man.
All right. Expect some cold pizza waiting at your desks tomorrow.
Nice. Very good.
Nice. Maybe Valdez will grace you with his presence there, and you can use his gift card.
Yes.
Nice. Let's do it.
His VIP card.
Let's make this happen.
Yeah, VIP card.
Get it right, actually.
All right, Grant. Right. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, buddy.
Enjoy yep. the draft tonight, guys. See ya.
Yep.
B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. It is high noon in the district of Columbia, where the Washington Commanders just took a tackle from the University of Oregon.
Oregon.
That is where James Crepia lives and covers the Oregon Ducks for the Oregonian. James, what's up, man? Thanks for making time for us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Appreciate you.
Let's start. What do we know about this kid? It seems like there's a lot to be excited about with young Mr. Connerly.
Yeah, well, you hear about, obviously, you know, for college fans who don't, or excuse me, for NFL fans who don't necessarily follow the college game that closely and all that, so you get into first-round picks, and every year you hear about all the five stars and that kind of stuff. Well, but that's who Josh Connerly is. He was one of the top offensive tackles 3 years ago, and he came out of the Northwest. Obviously, he was from Seattle, and he was heavily coveted all over the country, could have gone virtually anywhere. And at the end, it was coming down to Oregon and Ohio State mainly. Washington was involved, SC was involved, and it was a big deal here because Dan Lanning in his first year, it was the transition from Cristobal to Lanning in that December, and Lanning and his staff really didn't get in place until January, and Connerly waited all the way till April, and that was the first five-star of the Lanning era, and it was a huge deal, and it was getting him out of Seattle and the rivalry that was. And, oh, yeah, by the way, when you come in with all of that, you're expected to reach this level. You're expected to be this first-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the significance to this region and to this fan base and what matters. But then he met it. He met at every stage of the way. He played as a true freshman, actually caught a touchdown as freshman.
Wow.
They created a personnel package simply to get him on the field. And it was 14 personnel where he was, they call an extra tight end, it was literally 14J or 14 Josh. To get him out there. And if you go back and watch the 22 Oregon Colorado game, that was pre Dion Colorado. So that was the epically bad Colorado. And yes, he caught a touchdown in that game, but he's been that guy. And then he was the starter the past 2 years at left tackle. And like I say, played obviously extremely, extremely well, lived up to all of the hype, all of the potential. And that's how you can leave early and be a first round pick as he was and have all the teams really in the last 5 to 10 picks of the first round. Were teams that he had either formals with or had top 30 visits with.
This team seemed to like want to get a lot of character guys. What type of person is he?
Top of the list. Mm-hmm. And look, I'm not a fan. I'm not from here. I didn't go to school here. I'm not some homer mm-hmm. at all. No, this is a guy who you hear from everybody in the room. You hear from every coach. You hear from every teammate about. You hear things like cerebral from an offensive lineman. You hear about how much extra time he's spending. You hear from the offensive coordinator here, Will Stein, and Dan Lanning, that Josh could play almost any position, athletically gifted enough to where he could play almost any position on the field, and the OC says even quarterback, and not kidding. Mm-hmm. By way of understanding of the offense, yeah, like he spends that much more time. He cares to know that much more about everything that's going on, not just his blocking assignment and that. And you could say, well, he overloads himself. No. He wants to understand the game at that level. He cares about it at that level. He cares about his craft at that level. So, and then you add in the character bits and all the rest. No, this, like I say, from all accounts, really an upstanding young man and really an upstanding football player.
Wow. All right. This is a serious endorsement for this young man. Also super durable, right? Hasn't missed a game in 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I say, now it helps to be his size too.
He's
usually the one inflicting the pain and the damage, but yeah, or walling it off from two Heisman finalist quarterbacks. That helps. But yeah, no, he's been, like I say, they created a personnel package for him as a freshman, got him out there a whole bunch when they could. And for that matter, not just, I mentioned the touchdown catch, which was amusing, but also ran him out there as a 2-point conversion as a running back.
Wow.
And had him, you know, try, which again, hard to stop a man that size, in short yardage. So it wasn't quite the tush push, but, you know, they come up with another name for it. But yeah, they found out different ways to get him the ball, if need be. And it worked, you know, it worked out well. So no, like I say, really athletically gifted. And look, I'm not going to say raw by any stretch of the imagination as a lineman, but does he still have room to grow? Absolutely. And I know everybody is going to way freak out about the one rep at the Senior Bowl at right tackle against the nation's leader in sacks. It was his first rep at right tackle, not just of the day, I think in years, because he was a left tackle here. Mm-hmm. And then, oh yeah, by the way, like one rep later, then he stonewalled Mike Green.
Yeah.
That didn't quite get as much, you know, credence and didn't get as many retweets.
You know, people like to knock you down. They don't like to build you up. But I forgot, I didn't even think about this last night. Mariota's from Oregon. So he got somebody that could welcome him in and show him the way.
Yeah, a little bit. And then, and not just somebody who like, oh yeah, by the way, was here. Like Marcus was here about a week and a half or so ago.
Okay.
And has regularly come back. They literally have the Mariota Center. That's where the team works out in here. He's a bit of a big deal in Oregon, you might say.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah, a little bit of a thing. And yes, I mean, this is somebody who is actively engaged with the team on a regular basis, to where I'm quite confident that Josh Connolly has spent time with Marcus Mariota.
We're talking with James Crepea here from the Oregonian, knows the Ducks inside and out. Let me ask you this. I happened to see Cliff Kingsbury just in the hallway last night, and he was super fired up. The Commander's social media channels later pointed out that Cliff left a note on Adam Peters' desk to make sure he takes the Oregon tackle. I don't know how much of the Commander's offense you've watched, or maybe previously what Cliff has run. What is, you talked about the gifted level of athlete. What is his ability to kind of get downfield, get to the second level, get out in space? Because that's going to be asked of him, and it seems like Cliff thinks he can absolutely get it done.
Yeah, and those are things that hardly foreign concepts here. Again, they do a lot of pulling at Oregon, a lot in their run game. And they do a lot of guard-tackle combo and counter and pulls and those sorts of things. And, yeah, Josh is one of those guys who they were very, very comfortable having do that. If you go back to the years, now this is Cristobal, so it was before landing in this crew and what he got to play in, but they kind of imposed that, and you saw that with Penei Sewell at the time. Well, Josh really, for all intents and purposes, really followed Penei. There was a slight gap there, but – yeah, I mean, stylistically, and yeah, coordinators change and the like, but they were still extremely effective on offense, in particular in the run game as well. This past couple of seasons, we had Bucky Irving a year ago, and now Jordan James this year. Yeah, two really effective rushers, receivers out of the backfield. So getting tackles out in space, particularly, they did a lot in the screen game each of the past 2 years. Believe me, just ask any Oregon fan who wants to see the ball thrown that much more, or any opposing fan base who wanted to discredit their quarterbacks about how much the screen game was there. But for the tackles, that means getting out in space and opening some stuff up on the perimeter. And yeah, Connolly did that quite a bit.
That's wild, man. Were you surprised he lasted until 29?
No. No. And I said, not as a knock, but no, for one, there were quite a few talented tackles in this class. Start there. Two, in terms of, I mentioned the teams who, you know, he had formals with or top 30s, the two teams that he had both a formal and a top 30 with were the Texans and the Commanders. So I thought, my own self, that the second half of the first round was when my night was going to get rather interesting, and lo and behold, it did, because Derek Harmon had the same thing, both a formal and a top 30 with the Steelers, and was widely mocked to the Steelers, I think, by everyone with a pulse. So that made sense. And then when the Texans traded, I was like, okay, well, Commanders is still there, and he had either a formal or top 30 with, I tweeted it last night, but I think it was like five of the final six teams picking in the first round. So I figured that of the teams that were most likely, Houston and Washington were at the top of the list, but it really could have been just about anybody. And then you saw tackles go to several of those teams where frankly, if Washington didn't take Josh, then I thought that Kansas City was almost a lock at that point.
Okay. Well, I know folks inside the Commanders organization were really worried they would lose Connerly as early as 11 to San Fran. And then they were worried about the Bears trading back up to get him. And they were worried about the Rams, who ended up trading out of that pick at 26. I really wonder what L.A. might have done if they didn't trade out of that and just get an absurd offer from Atlanta to get out of that pick. We're talking with James Kripia here on the Rude Guest Hotline. You can follow him at James, C-R-E-P-E-A, writer for the Oregonian, covers the Ducks. It's got to be fun covering the Ducks. I mean, that's serious college football.
Good.
I mean, Oregon doesn't mess around, man. Looking to tonight, obviously Washington clearly scouted the Ducks heavy. Other Oregon players you expect to be drafted or even, what I was about to say, Pac-10 players or just other Big Ten players that you can't wait to see where they end up tonight?
Yeah, so for Oregon's purposes, this could be another program record weekend. Last year was really successful. Obviously, everybody knows, you know, Bo Nix, led the way, but there were several others in what was a record class, and several really talented players already made instant impacts in the league. That's what could be all over again and that much more this weekend. So, yes, Harmon and Connerly last night headlines it. But tonight, I think you're going to see Jordan Burch, their defensive end, who went up against Connerly a lot in practice. And they talked about how they made each other better over the last couple of years. I would expect him to go tonight. Could see the tight end Terrence Ferguson go tonight as well. I think it just kind of depends on exactly how much of a run is in the position, if you can get to the third round or not. Receiver Tez Johnson, he's electric. He's a water bug, but he's little.
Yeah,
he's real little. So it's going to come down to which GM is going to put their name on the line with a guy who's under 165 pounds, but runs.
There's a guy in Kansas City that like exceptional speed.
Yeah, that's kind of the big deal. So he's one of them for sure. Their right tackle, Johnny Cornelius. I don't know about tonight, but we'll definitely get picked throughout the course of the weekend. Jeff Bassa, the linebacker, their green dot this past year, their defensive leader, really kind of the face of the defense in a lot of ways outside of, yes, Harmon was highly productive, Burch is highly productive, but in terms of the middle linebacker spot specifically, Bassa. And they've got several others as well. I mentioned James before, the running back. Again, they've got a loaded draft class. They expect this to be anywhere from 10 to 12 guys get drafted.
Damn. Can I ask you just about a couple other, I guess, West Coast Big Ten players that I think are really on Washington's radar that came in for top 30 visits?
Absolutely.
One of them is Femi Oladejo, edge rusher, kind of linebacker from UCLA. What have you thought of his game and how he projects as a pro?
Yeah, I also thought that he was certainly really effective. Now, again, UCLA was quite a rebuild.
Yeah.
So you can't just go by team success or even team defensive success, because ultimately that team had talent. And he was at or near the top of the list in that, as far as they're concerned, along with Medrano, one of the linebackers, Schwetzinger, one of the linebackers. They had talent on both sides of the ball, quite frankly. Yeah, they were just amid a really, really big rebuild. But Oladejo was quite an effective player. Now, exactly how it translates and all that, the harder part for you mentioned another West Coast guy from the old Pac-12 to now Big Ten. Now, he brought into the Big Ten to where he was productive against legitimate teams, legitimate opponents. That's where the four West Coast schools who joined the Big Ten, that to me was a bit of the barometer. And in terms of when you were doing it in the Pac-12, some of those teams, just calling it what it is, you really didn't know how some of those things translated, because how much of this was stat padding against guys who, frankly, ain't making the league.
Right.
It just wasn't happening.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you're going up against offensive tackles who are also in the league or bound for the league, you know, who did UCLA play last year? Forget about whether they won or they lost, how the team did. That's neither here nor there. Who did Oladejo play and where was his production against? Well, he did it, you know, he had four TFLs against Iowa. Now that helps.
That's a hell of a line.
Yeah. You know, you start there and you look at other teams that they play. Like I say, they even played LSU in non-conference, Oregon, Penn State. Yeah, like, you know, he had it against some very real teams. So he was one of those guys who, I think, he backed it up by the fact that he had the production. He didn't just stat pad against the likes of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't just completely tar and feather Rutgers, you know, and that's where he got his numbers from. Like, no, he got it against some of the legit teams in the Big Ten, and that's where, yes, I thought some of his numbers really stood out. Again, among a UCLA defense in particular that did have some talented players, it was just, yes, amid a big rebuilding season for them.
James, I got to say how thankful I am you did not take a shot at my Maryland Terrapins right there. You decided to go after Rutgers, and I appreciate that. One other player that qualifies, Jalen Smith, the corner from USC.
Yeah, I like
obviously
him.
That Trojans defense was getting torched most of the year, but I don't know what the hell they got going there. Smith has some real skill, I believe. He came to Washington for a top 30. What do you make of his NFL prospects?
Yeah, unfortunately, didn't get a chance to see as much of him because Oregon didn't get to play them, quite frankly. So
that's bizarre.
At least it's fast. So just
how do they not let all the West Coast teams play each other?
Because they added a million teams over here now.
18-team conference, you know, until they expand the size of the schedule and the number of games the college teams
right,
play.
Right.
It's going to be awfully hard to pull off full-blown. They're never going to have a round robin again, that's for sure. like I say, unfortunately, didn't have a chance to see as much of them just because these teams didn't play this past year. But in the past, when I did get a chance to see them, when they played, I believe, the year before, again, I get talented. But when you're talking about he kind of played, I think, both safety and corner, I think, at times. I think he stood out to me a little bit more at the safety spot, in fairness. At corner, probably, I wouldn't say undersized exactly, but maybe a little bit.
Yeah, 5'10".
But slightly, like I say, not a total knock, but slightly. But more in the safety capacity, from what I can recall of seeing him. Yeah, and the guy who certainly stood out on that defense, like you said, the SC defense has had a little bit of difficulty the past couple of years, though in fairness, that's mainly been on the line of scrimmage more than anything. They've started to improve that, but in terms of more recent years, and now as I'm looking back, he actually didn't end up playing at Oregon even in 23. So like I say, it's been mainly in the preparation for that game. I think I was watching he had some productive games, but
he's a late round.
Yeah, like I say, I just haven't a chance to see him myself in a while.
Hey, James, thank you so much for the time, man.
We really
appreciate it, dude.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that is James Crepia here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Yeah, you can follow him at James, JAMESCREPEA, J-Dogs forever. He was really good. Dude, I mean, damn. Talk about J-Dogs. People are into Josh Connerly out in Eugene, man.
Well, we know he may have an opportunity to score a touchdown now.
People get high in Oregon. They're really high on Josh Connerly.
I wanted to get Mike Tice on the air with us on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Former head coach with the Minnesota Vikings and a longtime offensive coordinator, O-line coach. I'm not sure anybody knows more about O-line play than the former Terrapin. And he loved Connerly. So I just want to tap into his expertise on what he saw. Mike, you're on in D.C. It's Grant Paulson and Danny Ruye here on The Fan. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, guys. How are you?
Great. Doing very well. Thank you for hopping aboard with us. So you had Connerly rated as your number one offensive lineman in the class from the guys that you studied at the top of the board. Why was that?
Yeah, well, I looked at 11 guys for my son, Nate, who does a podcast on Yahoo Sports. And he asked me to take a peek at some of the top guys. And interestingly enough, he was pretty spot on because all of the guys I looked at got drafted yesterday. So, I'm a big proponent of big and athletic, you know, and I like guys that are very large and can look me in the eye at, you know, 6'8" and can change direction and recover and play well in space. With all of these flanker screens that are out there today in the NFL, all these wide receiver screens, these tackles have to be able to block little guys in space. And I saw the film of Connerly, two really good games, and I felt like this guy could adapt to the NFL style of play and also be athletic enough to recover against some of those great edge rushers that are in the National Football League. I'll be honest with you. I had Josh Simmons
way up there too from Ohio State, but he blew his knee out, so he kind of got dinged by me a little bit. But he's also a very good player. I want to give him his kudos as well. He got drafted behind Josh Connerly.
And Mike, you led me to my question. I wanted to know how he compared in your eyes. Obviously, the injury plays a part in it, to Josh Simmons. Similar profiles there, right? Taller guy who can really move around.
Yeah, absolutely. And both players, to me, were very elite. I also like the kid out of Texas, Banks, who went third, another athletic guy. You know, you got to look at the style of play that they're playing in the league today. And, you know, that is getting these athletes in space and making a defense tackle. And, you know, a lot of those defensive players, those little guys, those corners, they don't want to tackle. So, you know, I think it's a good move, a really great move by the Commanders. I'm really happy for my good friend Bobby Johnson, who's the O-line coach there, has done a great job. And I'm happy for the Commanders because this is a big step forward for what they're trying to do with their program.
Mike Tice on Grant and Danny, number one lineman he graded in this class as he watched the tape, is now in Washington at pick 29. Can you go deeper into, because Cliff Kingsbury majors in some of the stuff you talked about, the screens, getting out in space, needing those athletic tackles who can run and get out wide, like what you saw in terms of footwork and athletic traits, because Connerly got a direct snap on the goal line in a carry at Oregon. He caught a touchdown pass. It seems to me like he can move a little bit.
Well, he played running back in high school. And so that's, you know, and he was a basketball player in high school. He went to Rainier Beach High School in Seattle. Of course, I have cut my teeth in the NFL in Seattle and spent a lot of my adult life in Seattle and recently sold a home there that I had for years. And Rainier Beach High School, you got to come out of there with a little bit of you-know-what in your neck. So he's got some toughness to him. He played basketball at Rainier Beach High School. They were known for their basketball team. So I'm a big proponent on big athletic guys with the style of play that's going around in the National Football League. Now, this guy, Connerly, this kid, I haven't met him. I tell you what, he fits the mold perfectly, and I'm really, really happy for the Commanders.
Mike, when you're watching linemen and when you're grading a guy out like him who improved so much in the last year and is only 21 years old, how do you get a feel for, I don't know what you would call it, but that nastiness or that mean streak that is a necessity in the run game? Because I'm thinking about like Laramie Tunsil. We had a lot of people on from Houston to talk about the big elite left tackle Washington added, and they called him almost like a white-collar offensive lineman. Like, he's awesome. He's more finesse against the pass, but maybe he doesn't want to be pounding the football 30 times. Like, how do you figure that out as an evaluator?
Well, it's easy. You look at the film and see how guys finish. You know, if they're finishing through the echo of the whistle, they're finishing downfield. These are the kind of guys that have some grit to them. These are some of the guys that have been taught well by their coaches throughout their maturity process of high school, little league. And this is a credit to the coaches teaching young players how to finish. And this is also a credit to the university, whatever university that is, making sure these kids go out there and work hard and don't just take anything for granted.
What are the weaknesses right now that you see?
Well, it looks like to me there's a little bit of strength issues, but that's a lot. You know, that goes around a lot. He can get strong. You got to remember, this kid's young. I mean, he's got some growing to do. He's got some learning to do, but he has the physical makeup. He's got some stuff he was born with that you can't teach, and that's that recoverability and that ability to bend and get out in space and move. And there's a lot of upside to this kid. A lot of upside.
You mentioned that you have a relationship with Bobby Johnson. So he came over from the Giants when they hired him. I got to be honest. It was kind of maligned hire just because the Giants had such struggles on their offensive line. But he was one of the most valuable people in the building last year. Did a really nice job. How far back do you guys know? How well do you know him?
Well, Bobby and I go back to when I coached for Jack Del Rio. We both did at Oakland, which was my last stop. And Bobby coached the tight ends and I coached the offensive line. And Bobby and I worked together every week had our players do combinations together every week. I watched them grow. He asked a lot of great questions, and I'm very, very proud of Bobby. I think he's done a great job as an offensive line coach, starting with when he was in Buffalo.
Mike, my last one for you is there's a pretty good player that Grant mentioned, Laremy Tunsil, that looks to be the starter at left tackle, and it looks like Connerly would be in contention to start at right tackle. I think we underestimate that, but I'd love for you to give me your expertise here. How tough is it to kind of do that mirror image to go from left to right and do it at the highest level we got?
It's not that tough. You know, you go back to the kid that was drafted by the Jets, Membau from Missouri. Okay, this kid is going to play on the right side. A left side, I'm not sure. The kid from LSU that went first, Will Campbell, I didn't see him as a left tackle. That's why I didn't have him that high. You know, there were some questions about his arm length and this and that, but you got a guy in Simmons, and you got a guy in Connerly that are two guys that are able athletically to play wherever they put them. It doesn't really matter. And the same thing with Banks, the kid from Texas that went to the Saints. These are guys that if you got to put them on the right side while a veteran finishes up his tenure, if you will, then you put him on the right side. When he goes to the left side, he's going to have his feet under him because he's going to have a couple of years of playing in the league.
Mike Tice played in Maryland, ended up catching 11 touchdowns in the National Football League, had a terrific coaching career, head coach, longtime coordinator in many, many years, making offensive lines better. Before we let you go, do you remember a situation, I'm sure you had something like this, where Washington is kind of throwing a lot of guys at problems on their O-line in that now you've got your bookend set, but Brandon Coleman started for them at left tackle last year. He kicks into guard. Andrew Wiley started at the other tackle. Maybe he kicks inside. They've created a bunch of competition. We don't really know who's going to end up starting, but there were guys that were starting last year that are now competing and may not, which means they've gotten better. Do you remember a situation like that where you went into a camp where everyone was going to be battling maybe?
Oh, I had that multiple times. In my 21 years coaching the offensive line, we had a lot of questions going into training camp. Now, the negative they have now, these young kids or these coaches really, in making their decisions, is they don't have all that live contact work that we used to have in training camps where you can let it sort itself out. Nowadays, you know, they do everything in underwear, certainly don't want to get anybody hurt. And so it's a little bit more difficult, but it always sorts itself out. The guys that go into those preseason games and come out with blocking their guy a lot more than they didn't are the guys that are going to end up being the starters.
Mike, this is great, man. Really appreciate the information. Thanks for taking the time with us.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Be well. There's Mike Tice, longtime NFL coach. Watched the tape on all the best linemen in this class and came away thinking Josh Connerly was the number one tackle, and Washington got him at the end of the first round.
We've got a very special guest right now. Thanks to our friends at Best Buddies, VA and DC, and Chris Russell from the Team 980 on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. It is Commander's Guard Sam Cosmi. Sam, welcome to the show.
Appreciate you having me.
Man, I'm fired up. I'm glad to get you on the show today. Fantastic season for you and the Commanders. 12 wins, conference championship game, and now everybody is fired up. We're all excited for the future. The future is now, and I know today you were out with Best Buddies for the Friendship Walk. How was the event this morning?
Man, it was so special, and being able to be around them and be in that environment and how joyful it was and how much of a blessing it was. It was really cool to be a part of and, you know, super, super special for sure.
That's awesome. And you can donate now. I tweeted out the link at AWOD Radio. Make a donation, an investment in tomorrow, a world where people can live with intellectual and development disabilities and be fully accepted and integrated into society. So, Sam, you had an incredible season. And I know the fan base wants to know just what it's like blocking for Jaden Daniels. I mean, maybe the best rookie season in NFL history. He keeps every play alive. What's it like blocking for Jaden?
I mean, what a class act for sure. You know, he's a guy that can keep his composure, especially when in those big moments. I mean, throughout the whole season, we had a lot of close games. And so being able to block for him and making sure he has that time to get the ball out or do something with his legs. I mean, we all saw it this season. It was really special to watch. And
Like I said, if we give him enough time, like in versus Chicago, he'll do something special. So, what a guy to play for and block for.
When did you feel like you guys started really clicking this season? I mean, you've been here and been a part of some seasons where you've had some success and then it falls off or it's been tough. What do you think was the turning point this season where you just took off and kept winning?
There was a couple turning points. I mean, we started off hot early on, and being able to go to Cincinnati and play the Bengals on a prime time, I think it was Thursday night, and being able to do that and play like we did. I mean, Jaden had some crazy, crazy plays in there. So did Terry. As a team, we just really gelled and clicked there. But I would say definitely Cincinnati, and then we hit a little, rough patch in the middle of the season, as some teams do. But we were able to click, and we didn't waver, and it was really cool in the atmosphere and the culture that we had in the locker room. So we knew we had something special last season, and we know we have something special this season. So we're looking forward to this season a lot.
You mentioned the Cincinnati game. I think you're so right. My perspective watching it was that you guys really started to click in that game. And then as a team, instead of coming home, you go right to Arizona and blow out the Cardinals. What was it like, the team chemistry during that week?
Man, it was really cool to hang out with each other during that week and be in Arizona and being able to spend some quality time with each other and being able to perform how we did. We were just firing on all cylinders that game. And so, offensively and defensively. So we played four quarters of complimentary football, and that was just so cool to watch.
Where are you at with your rehab now and dealing with that injury?
Yeah, I'm in the process of, taking every week, every day. I feel like it's going really well. I'm here at the facility, working with the guys here, and it's been smooth so far. So no hiccups, no curve bumps or anything like that. And it's been good so far. So I'm working to get on the field, sooner rather than later.
Sam, I wonder, how do you guys in that locker room view the running backs room? Brian Robinson Jr., Austin Eckler, you got the few other guys, McNichols, you got Rodriguez in there. How do you view your running back room compared to the rest of the league and the talent of their backfield?
Yeah, I mean, we have a really, really strong running back room, guys that love to compete, guys that run really hard downfield and try to go north to south. It's a lot of competition in that room, and, we have a bunch of studs in that room, so it's great to have those group of guys and being able to lean on them, especially in the run game, and knowing they're going to give it their all whenever they carry the ball and do their thing. So for sure.
And you guys have done a great job setting up lanes for them to run through. And now you have an addition of another offensive lineman in Josh Connerly Jr. out of Oregon coming in. How do you feel about the group as a whole growing with the youth and also the mix of the veterans like yourself, Andrew Wiley, and adding Laremy Tunsil?
Yeah, I mean, we have a great group, a great chemistry in our group. And, adding these guys, they're just going to enhance the room. And, hopefully, I always kind of say maybe we can bring back the Hogs 2.0. So, I really want to build that here and do that. And so, AP knows that through the O-line, everything else, operates on the off side of the ball. So I'm excited about it. Great room, great group of guys. So blessed to be here.
You've been in Washington for a while now, and the fan base has fallen in love with you as our badass on the offensive line. How cool is it to witness the fan base grow and the energy after this incredible season? And you're just hanging out in the offseason. You're doing this charity event today for Best Buddies. The team went to the Caps game, and you're seeing in D.C. everybody's obsessed with this team now from one good season. What's that like?
Man, the turnaround has been awesome. I mean, what our ownership has been able to do with Josh Harris and bringing in DQ and AP and all these guys, all these key pieces, and being able to build a culture with this team and have the belief in our city
and the fan base. I mean, it's been super special. I've personally thoroughly, you know, enjoyed it, and it just makes you play even harder. And the wins matter so much more, and the losses hurt so much more. So just because you know what it means to the city, what it means to the fan base, and, you know, the support that we got was, I mean, like I said, something special, something really appreciated by us in our organization as players. So,
Sam, would you be able to speak to the NFL coming out with the survey about how the players are treated? And there was a lot of improvement in terms of the change of ownership and the grades that the Commanders players were given for the team in this anonymous survey. Can you speak to the changes you've noticed from the ownership group and what they've done helping out the players?
Yeah, I mean, they've really poured in a lot of resources and money and things into us. I mean, like I said, have went out there, got a lot of good people to support us. And you know, as in that instance, you know, as much as you put in is as much as you get out. So, you know, they've understood that and they've given us the tools to be even more successful and not have to worry about little things. And, you know, that's a huge thing on a week to week basis. So, really appreciative of that. It goes a long way, and it was able to show last season.
Well, Sam, I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm fired up to see you back on the field this season. Chris Russell's one of my favorite guys in media. I'm so glad you got to work with him today for the fundraiser with Team 980, Odyssey, and Best Buddies and their Friendship Walk. And people can donate today, bestbuddiesfriendshipwalk.org. So, Sam, thanks so much for joining, and thank you so much for being part of the event today.
For sure. It was a blast. Thank you so much.
Yep. Hail to the Commanders. Raise hail, Sam. Thanks so much, man.
So we'll go out to the phone lines now. Joining us, the wide receiver coach for Tech, Fontel Mines. Coach, first and foremost, congratulations. I know this is a huge day for the program. Walk us through what Washington is getting from a broad perspective with their newest draft pick in Jalen Lane.
I appreciate you guys having me, man. I tell you what, the first thing about Jalen Lane, he is one of the best people that you will have a chance and an opportunity to meet and be around. Himself, his family, just first-class people, man, and just the way they go about themselves and do business. Super loyal. Jalen's elite worker. His attributes at the receiver position stand out to me. He has natural ball skills. He just has natural instincts to make the play. When the game's on the line, whether that's punt return, whether that's receiving, whether that's carrying the ball, like, he's so valuable to a team because he'll be a full-court special teams guy. I mean, I can't say enough positive things about that kid. He's going to be sorely missed here in Blacksburg, man, but I'm just super thrilled and excited for him in this next chapter of his life.
Hey, Coach, we appreciate you giving us some time, man. I wanted to ask you this. So he spent his first three seasons at Middle Tennessee. When he enters the portal and the name is out there, what initially attracted you guys to him?
I tell you what, I actually recruited him a little bit. I was at East Carolina.
Okay.
He ended up going to Middle. So I was familiar with the family, but the biggest connection we had, our defensive backs coach, Derek Jones, longtime friends with his dad. So his dad reached out to us. He took two visits. He was in the portal the next day. He took two visits, and he was ready to roll. And, you know, we were in need of dynamic playmakers to kind of change our offense. And we had some young talent, but we needed some veterans to come in and that were proven and that can play right away. And he was a no-brainer, man. I mean, the offensive coordinator at the time, Tyler Bowen, I think he watched two clips versus Miami, and then he turned off the tape like, all right, what are we doing here? Let's go get him. Like, this is a no-brainer.
So you mentioned the threat that he can be on special teams. We here in D.C., Coach, we hear that, and it perks our ears up because that's a position that we have been crying for some sort of playmaker at. What specifically does he offer when it comes to punt returns and kick returns?
He's fearless. He's fearless. He can't be shaken. He can't be broke. There's no doubt in my mind he would have led the country in punt return yardage had he just fair caught five of them. It was no kick he was not going to field, but that's how he is because he wanted to impact the game in some way. And he just knowing opportunities may be limited, especially in college, like, he wanted to make sure he can find a way to impact the game. And he's just fearless, man.
For sure, Coach. And last year, the Washington Commanders led the NFL in wide receiver screens thrown. What do you say to folks that look at Jalen Lane and go, Well, what happens when the ball gets in his hand?
I mean, that's when he's at his best. And I think that's the difference between good and great receivers is what they do when they have the ball in their hands. And we just try to find as many ways for him to touch it, screens, reverses, play action shots, punt returns, throwback passes, like anything to get the ball in 83's hands was a positive play for us.
Now, did he participate in any of the throwing of the throwback passes? Because there were a couple times last year, Coach, where Cliff Kingsbury had some stuff dialed up and guys didn't end up throwing the ball. If he's put in that position, is he going to throw it?
I tell you what, man, you got to check the tape. He actually threw a touchdown. He's responsible for a touchdown on punt return. He threw a touchdown. He ran a touchdown. And he had a receiving touchdown. So we're going to talk about versatility. Jalen Lane's your guy.
Just as versatile as they come, Coach, as you're mentioning, you obviously got to work with him very closely. I'm reading here in his background that he is the son of a football coach. Knowing what you know about the game, how do you see that in Jalen Lane and his mentality and how he carries himself? Does it show that he is the son of a football coach?
Without a doubt, and I think that's probably one of his biggest attributes that stick out. The kid does not leave the facility. Big reason he came back was to he just wanted to treat his last year like a professional. He was still in school. He still needed to graduate. Between school, between taking care of his body, between film, between the Monarch. I mean, when we got the Monarch purchase, they may have broke a Monarch record for how long they were in there. We had to create an app so they can turn on the lights in the indoor. But that's just who he is, man. He is an elite worker, and he will not leave that building. And the biggest thing about it, he's humble, he's hardworking, and he pays it forward. So I love that kid, man.
So, Coach, I know I'm looking at your track record here, and you spent a little bit of time here in Washington in the mid-2010s. Obviously, the program and the situation is a lot different now with new ownership, with Adam Peters. I'm just curious if you've had any conversation with members of this organization leading up to the draft process, and how do you feel about the way it's situated now?
I've had just some surface-level conversations with the receivers coach, and Daryl Tapp came back and spoke to our high school coaches at our coaches' clinic. So got some time to spend with Coach Tapp. I just love the way and the direction that the program is going. Good people, high energy, upbeat, positive. I think it's going to be a really good fit, man. And I just, you know, my mom's a longtime Commander fan.
So I love that. There we
love
go.
It, love anybody. It. She was the first one that texted me, Jalen's going to the Commanders. I'm like, yeah, Mom, it's happening. So shout out to her for sure. But just love, man, just that opportunity, I think, is going to be a really perfect fit for the Commanders and for Jalen.
For sure, Coach. We appreciate you giving us some time, man. We'll let you go, and good luck, man.
Thank you guys so much.
I'm about to say, we should be thanking Coach.
Yeah,
thank you for helping mold Jalen Lane into the dog that he is, man. He's going to help us out a lot.
No doubt, man. I appreciate y'all. Take care of my boy.
Yes, sir.
That is wide receiver coach from Virginia Tech, Fontel Mines, who's good enough to give us a little bit of time here telling us and kind of informing us about what Washington is getting with their latest draft pick. They selected wide receiver from Virginia Tech, Jalen Lane, at number 128.